Good afternoon. This is Kathleen McCoy. You're listening to Hometown Alaska. And I'm going to start with a little story that I heard that relates to today's show. I have heard teachers say that in kindergarten, first grade, those early grades, every kid in the class is an artist. But by the fifth or sixth grade, the artists have all been singled out and identified. Ask a child to draw you something and he or she will point to their classmate and say, "Ask him, he's the artist. She's the artist." Well, today we have two artists with us on the show who made it all the way through college and beyond, and they are still artists. So on today's show, we're going to figure out how they made that happen, how they made it through the fifth grade gauntlet or whatever, and remained artists. So I want to welcome to Hometown Alaska Karen Lowell in the studio with me today. Hi, Karen.
Hello, Kathleen.
And this is a return visit for you because you have been here before related to art shows in town that you were involved in. Mm-hmm. And then Jimmy Reardon. Hi, Jimmy.
Hi. How's it going, Kathleen?
Just great. Jimmy is in Vermont and calling in. So we're really lucky to have him. Traveling is a big part of what his art is about, so it's not unusual that we would have him on the phone. That might be the only way we could actually get Jimmy Reardon on the show. So welcome to you both. Before we go on and talk about your artwork and talk about the process of art, just want to let our listeners know that on our website we've got some links to Jimmy's work. He's done a lot of good compiling of how it's related to one another. There's a great video that explains a lot of his work. And we also have some stories there and material on Karen Lowell. She has a show on right now at the Anchorage Museum called Groundwork. So they're both very, very relevant artists with work happening right now. And I'd also like to say to our listeners, if you've known these two artists, they've been in Alaska for a long time, and you've got questions for them, we welcome you to call in and ask your question or just say hi. Or you may be an artist that's working your way through some of the processes that we're going to talk about today and some of the challenges. And we welcome those kind of questions, too. So don't be shy. I'll toss out our phone number for you. It's in Anchorage, 550-8433. Or outside of Anchorage, it's 1-888-353-5752. And we can take an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So anyway, welcome to you both. I'm imagining the show is really going to go back and forth between the two of you because a lot of my questions have to do with process and stick-to-itiveness and resilience and ideas, where ideas come from. But we're going to start off just a little bit with Karen to talk a little bit about Groundwork, which is the show that's at the Anchorage Museum right now. And I guess, you know, the obvious question is, where did that come from?
I've been making work as part of the textile community for quite a while, and I never quite know where to position it. So I've done things for Object Runway. I used to teach at UAA. I've worked with textiles in my work since grad school, but they're not sort of traditional pieces. And a while ago, I started working with the idea of translucence and light and sculpture and taking cloth and making it more like a rigid thing, something that's hard instead of flexible. And this piece, or these pieces, I guess, for the whole show came out of this desire to make sort of like monumental textile works. And there are seven large pieces. They're all backlit. Some of them have holes in them. Some of them are translucent so that the light shines through more in a diffuse way. And I also really felt like I needed to have work that set me up to do more work in the future rather than looking back to the past. I needed to sort of draw a line and make work that's forward thinking. So that's kind of where that's that's from. Mm-hmm.
You know, you're the first person who I heard the word Arduino from.
Arduino.
Which is, I still love that word.
I know.
Which is a little tiny light woven into fabric.
It's a little like a microprocessor, uh-huh. Really tiny, tiny computer. It's very simple. And you can work with just on and off switches, or you can program code to make arrays or fades. Yeah, so, and it's something that's used in garments. You could stitch it into cloth.
It is not a light. It would power a light.
It could power a light, or it could close a circuit for sound or for, I don't know, you could probably do stuff with magnetism. Just anything that requires a circuit to be completed.
Okay, so anyway, it's just a really fun word.
Yeah.
By the way, I wanted to say about both of these folks on the show today that I've known of Karen. She was on the show, I think, past Object Runway, but I also stumbled into you in a textile class at UAA where you were teaching and have seen your work around town. In fact, I brought into the studio this this little postcard that I had put on my wall just because I liked it so much, and it was from work from about 2010, and it was called Worn. And it, to me, it looks like little hearts, but also they are smudged and, you know, it's interesting.
Messy.
Yeah. Anyway, I like both the repetition, but the wornness of it. And I think that piece was called Worn, and it was over at the Arc Gallery at UA. So I've been watching your work, and I know there's many things I haven't seen, you know, that you've been involved in, but there was that. And we've had a few conversations that have always been really fun. And then in the case of Jimmy, I actually used to work at the Anchorage Daily News, and I can remember Jimmy coming into the Anchorage Daily News newsroom in the seventh grade. Right, Jimmy?
Yep, that's probably about right.
And you were sort of in tow of your mom, Ann Phenip Reardon, who I think was trying to, you know, if you had an interest, she was going to find a way for you to, you know, pursue that. And I believe that you spent a day with Peter Dunlap Scholl, who was the, you know, editorial cartoonist there.
I spent at least a year or two through like a high school and junior high mentorship program. So
I can remember you laying out
once a week for a while. I was hanging out with Peter, which was an amazing experience at that age.
Yes, and I think I even remember you laying out some feature sections. You know, things that were going to be in tomorrow's newspaper, and you were executing some designs. And so I knew it was a long term, but I knew it began a really, really long time ago. And then the next time I think you went away to college. I think. And then I saw the U-Haul show, which was so fun, in the parking lot of Mad Myrna's, I think it was. And I got the sense of, you know, you had just come back to town and it's hard to break in. Well, what the heck? I'll just, you know, rent some U-Hauls and have a show. Was that the impetus behind that one?
Well, not really. I had been back in town for a number of years. It was actually, we had rented a single U-Haul in the spring of 2009 and set it up as a gallery. By we, I mean a group of artists we were calling Brick at the time. And we were sort of camping out in front of other galleries on First Friday and trying to sort of take some of their patrons.
And before they even get
so
in the door.
This was us trying to repeat that process again, but like at a grander scale.
Right. And we had Karen talk a little bit about her work, and it's hard to say to you, wrap it all up for us in a nice little package, because yours is really interesting and has many legs to it. But tell us a little bit about
I mean, I don't even pronounce it correct. Le Roman de Liev.
Liev.
That you would say it.
A French title.
Yeah, it's the French title of a book that I translated, not knowing the language, back in 2008. And I've been working with the text for a while now. After translating it, I shared it with a bunch of artists and have done a lot of collaborative and sort of travel-based work around it. I had a group show at MTS Gallery that had about 70 artists, almost.
From across the country?
To the text.
From across the U.S. and some European, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Is exactly.
It big concept. To me, it feels almost as if this book, which I have a lot of questions about, that it has kind of this and your affection and attraction to it and your work with it has kind of become kind of a spine for your creative life. I mean, you've spun off so many things that include travel, meeting other artists, shows, just all kinds of things that this is the kind of tiny seed of, or not so tiny seed of, I guess. So, I mean, was that all intentional, or does it just keep coming up?
I think it's a little bit of both. I feel as though my practice is sort of divided. I work with this book, but I also do things like the U-Haul project, which are one time, a little bit more novel, and definitely more community-based or community-focused. And then the book is sort of more my personal practice. And I don't know, a lot of people might sympathize with this or understand this notion, but when you're doing a project, you reach this point at the end where when you're finished, you have like this letdown. Mm-hmm. And I've found this book to be the thing that, every time I hit that point with a shorter term project and I kind of get this letdown and I don't know what to do, I always can kind of fall onto or work with the text. So in that way, it's been a really useful project to have going for so long.
There was a lot of recognition of that end of project letdown.
Yes,
you can really relate to that.
Yeah. And I know that that's kind of a common tool that a lot of artists use, is you always have something that's not finished in the studio to go back to when you finish a big project. Otherwise, you just have this gulf that's scary and dark and sad.
Yeah.
So that's really, I think, Jimmy, you and I talked about that, and that just seems like a really smart way to sort of navigate that. You just have this piece that is going to keep going, and you can always go back to it, and it's a long arc instead of sort of temporal. I think that's really smart.
Yeah, yeah. I have just a burning question for Jimmy, which is, I saw your video on your website, and if people want to see that video, the link is on the alaskapublic.org website. But anyway, you flash on the library where you saw the book and that you stole the book from the library. And I just want to know what spoke to you about that book. You didn't read French. Did you know something about the writer? What was it about that book that you just could not part with it?
So I actually originally encountered it in a 1920s translation. So the one that I stole was in English, but I stole it based on appearance entirely.
the cover? You can judge a book by its cover.
Yeah, well, it was a university library, so most of the books were these large volumes that had been rebound in like vinyl, like really gross sort of tans and grays and, you know, and puke-colored vinyl. And on the shelf there was this little 1950s edition from like the Siegel Library collection of this book, and so it had this beautiful little fabric cover. It was a teeny little volume that had these prints of seagulls and waves. So it was really based on the appearance.
I don't know. I have things that happen to me like that, where it's just there's some connection, and I'm not really sure why it happened or how it happened, but you can't see your life going forward without this thing happening. So, okay, well, we'll talk more about that. I have a question for Karen, just a little bit about groundwork, and then we'll kind of move into some general questions about the process and the life of and the ups and the downs. I had a question for you about the show Groundwork at the museum, and I wondered whether it was, you know, a mountain you had climbed. I think I phrased this for you, that you finally got to the top of. And I know you've told us you were opening up new doors, really. Mm-hmm. So maybe it wasn't that, you know, or was it sort of like you're walking along a coastline and this is just one more, you know, is there any
like the terrain?
Yes.
Like moving through the terrain.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think it was as arduous as a mountain. It felt like a really sort of natural extension from a lot of the other work I've done. The only thing that was different is the work itself is really big, like large pieces, and time was really different. Like in the past when I've worked on projects, you know, it might be like a good 3-month push. This was a good year, and then the actual making of the pieces was really labor intensive. So, but it didn't feel... I swung so much energy away from all the other things in my life, and I just really focused on my job and my kids and then studio time. That was it. And so it felt really natural to just be in the studio all the time working on this stuff. It was nice. It was good. And then now that it's kind of over, I'm looking at it and saying, oh, that was a mountain.
I see now that I could have fallen off.
Yeah.
And I'm lucky I did. Yeah. It's still at the museum through November 9th, right?
Yes.
So,
yep.
And it does seem like it is there's something of everything you've done in there, and yet it's also something that you've never done.
Right. That's a good way to, that's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are like threads. I think of, I had a professor in college who talked about artists working through their own kind of like psychic landscape, like a subterranean landscape that is always present. And if you're working, you always are tapped into it. If you take breaks and then come back to it, the terrain has changed a little bit. It's really an interesting idea. And so I feel like there are threads, there are themes and currents in my work that I can chase all the way back to stuff in undergrad. And then there are, you know, elements that are new and they get incorporated. But there are definitely aspects to this show that have to do with erosion and wear and looking at reassembling and recombining things. And then that light part that's...
Very
shining,
important, yeah. Which I think is for Alaskans, it
really
resonates a lot as we go into the dark. I have so many indirect lights all over my house because I don't know, somehow it's like you get to have sunset in the room anyway if there's no sunset outside.
Right.
I don't know. It's just, it's very important. Jimmy, I'll ask you the same question. Is your work an accumulation of what you've, you know, sort of what you've done before now? I know that's hard because you have the book and then you have other work. You have, you know, comics, all kinds of stuff. But how could we address that with you? How does it feel to you?
I mean, I think that, yeah, there's definitely threads that go through my entire practice. There's, like, reoccurring themes, and there's the way I approach things has changed, but, you know, there's similarities between when I first started making work and now, I imagine. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think what I really am struck by Karen's work, or what I really I find myself connecting to, is this, that, like, there's a lot of these underlying ideas, there's these reoccurring themes, but that it's all executed through this labor, like, through, you know, there's not a fear of the labor that's required to produce this body of work, or to go through these processes to lay this stuff out. And I, you know, I very much sort of sympathize with that idea. It's like kind of going through these actions.
Yeah, so
I think there's some similarities between, like, printmaking, bookbinding, printmaking, any kind of graphic mark making, and then textile production. Just the work ethic that's really required. You can't be, I mean, yeah, you can be lazy, but
you won't get
as far. You won't. Yeah. The work won't have the same, for me, it won't have the same kind of resonance. Yeah. And that's what I admire about Jimmy's work. Yeah. Also,
you know, Jimmy, you use the word, by the way, I'm going to remind folks, this is Hometown Alaska, and we have Karen Lowell, a local artist with a beautiful show at the Anchorage Museum, in the studio with us, and we have Jimmy Reardon on the phone from Vermont on one of his artistic escapades across the country. He's an Alaskan, but spends a lot of time out of the state reconnecting or connecting with other artists. So that's who's on the show. I wanted to ask Jimmy and Karen both this question. Jimmy, you used the word, that's my practice, when you talked about the book, Le Roman Liev. I hope I said that right. And I wondered, Karen, does it feel like a practice to you? I almost think of like a meditation or a something you have to do every day, because actually doing it every day is
the work.
The point. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Like when people talk about artwork, sometimes they talk about the objects that are like the residue. For me, I don't care about that. And I never care about it. And it's probably, I should care more than I do. But the work is the actual labor part.
That's the art.
Yeah, that's the art. That's where it happens. And when you're in the studio and you're making, it's not hard. It's delicious. It's lovely. Like, that kind of time is just the best ever. So it's not even like, oh, you have to go in the studio and work. It's you want to. And the more you do, the more you want to, and the better the outcome is for me. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure that I've had times where it's not fun and you're wrestling with stuff and it makes you angry and you wish it would behave, or you wish it would cooperate more, or, you know, there are periods of drudgery. But overall, I like that word, practice or work. That's the work.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and work is fun.
Yeah. You wouldn't do it. Yeah, work can be fun if you don't even notice time passing by.
Yeah.
And you're engaged.
What's great about being an artist is you can do whatever you want. Nobody's telling you to do stuff. Mm-hmm. You get to set the parameters and the experiments and the investigation. And so, like, the inquiry is great. Mm-hmm. It's really the best. Like, I think when we talk about, like, how do you keep doing what you do over time, that's why, because nobody's bossing you around. You get to do it.
You're on your
way.
your own path.
Yeah.
And, to a certain extent, answering your own questions,
yes,
satisfying your own expectations for what something should be. Jimmy, does that resonate with you, that concept of,
yeah,
you use the word first, but I don't know how you mean it.
No, I definitely agree with most of what Karen is saying. I mean, I honestly believe that time, if you talk about the time or the time that you put in a studio or you put in working, that it moves at a different speed or it moves at a different pace. It's like a different sort of time in the studio and when you're working, and it's and that pace or that movement is sort of addicting.
Yeah, I know that feeling. I mean, for me, it's around deadlines and writing, but when I'm really facing it and engaged, it doesn't really matter.
Yep.
You know, I mean, I do have to meet the deadline, but marching all the way up to that, it can be really completely captivating.
Yes. Yeah,
and satisfying even to meet it. So I want to ask a question, by the way. I forgot what I was going to say. No, it was about obsession, because when I looked at some of Karen's pieces, the amount of detail that's mm-hmm. in there, I don't know that that's obsession. I have no idea what it would be. But and then Jimmy, you actually in your video actually talked about obsession. So I want to talk about obsession and how it relates to the work. Is there a window in there for either one of you to jump in?
Go, Jimmy. Do it.
Yeah, no, I can jump in. I mean, so, you know, when I mentioned earlier that, like, I stole this book based upon its appearance, like, soon after I lost it, that's when I became obsessed. Like, so I think when you're talking about what I said in the video, that's sort of what I was referring to. It's this notion that it wasn't the book itself initially. It was, like, the loss of something and then the desire to have it back that created an obsession that I was able to then, like, turn into a project or turn into a practice. So I think that, yeah, I mean, obsession plays a large role. I mean, it's hard. I mean, we talk about these positive aspects of being an artist where, like, when you're in the studio, you don't have anybody bossing you around, or, you know, you're working within this, like, sort of different time frame. But there's also the negative of it. Like, when you leave the studio, you can't, like, push it aside, you know?
It's still in your brain, still turned on, full speed ahead. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Well, and go ahead.
Oh, no, go.
Well, I was thinking about obsession because, to me, it does have this kind of, like, dark underbelly connotation. Like, you can't really help. You can't help it. It's compelling you to do things. And it seems like that comes from places where things are unresolved completely and you don't have any good answers. So, in a way, it's not great, but I think it's the thing that does propel you forward.
Mm-hmm.
If you can, I don't know. I thought about that a lot. Like, what's the difference between just doing something over and over in a kind of a repetitive way that's driven more by, like, a work ethic versus something that is, like, compulsive or driven from forces? I don't know. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
That's for you, Jimmy. through the telephone wires.
That makes sense.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, I obsession is hard to turn off, and it also has a physical effect on you. You speed up, you focus, you don't see things outside your focal point. And Jimmy, you said it's hard to turn that off, and it's almost physical, really. Mm-hmm. It's a physical engagement. So that's, I don't know, I just think it's interesting. I kind of want to know how much persistence and obsession are required to get the work done.
Well, I've been thinking a lot about just health and how, you know, how I perceive myself as an artist and how sort of the world in general looks at artists. And one of the things I've really thought hard about is how to stay steady without looking crazy, because that sort of mythology plays into a large part of the way that people talk about art and the art world. And I don't think it's a good way to frame things.
Well, you know, sometimes artists can be dismissed.
Yeah.
They're an artist. You know, they can't actually do this.
Yeah.
Or they can't meet that.
Yeah.
And is that a bit of what you're talking about? Or is it just well-being even?
Well, even well-being. I mean, I do think one of the things that happened when I was working on the show is I wasn't paying attention to exercise and eating well, and I wasn't sleeping, and I didn't like it. I could tell it wasn't, like, a good place to come from. So one of the sort of other side of the hill is I've been really focusing on, you know, good boundaries and eating right and getting out and walking and resting, making sure I get good sleep, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Jimmy, does that affect you? Or, I mean, you're newer at the field than Karen is, maybe?
Yeah, I think he's
about
been
the same. Okay. I don't know.
Yeah. Jimmy? No, it affects, definitely affects me. I mean, I think there's the idea of, like, your relationships with, like, friends and loved ones. There's the idea of, like, your health. There's the idea of, like, any sort of sustainability or, like, you know, like, financial, like, security. There's a lot of things that play into it. Yeah, I used to, when I first started teaching, I used to tell my students, and I actually don't know if I believe this anymore or if I ever actually really did.
But you're going to tell the world anyway.
I would tell my students, I would go down a list of those symptoms that that were like symptomatic of a substance abuse or like of an addiction of any sort, and replace whatever that other thing was with this like notion of art. And they tell them, you know, like if you're not neglecting friends and loved ones, if you're not borrowing money you don't intend to return, if you're not like eating poorly and like not paying attention to your health, if you're not like, you know, it's like you can go down that list for indefinitely, taking jobs you don't want to do just to like afford your artistic practice or your habit, you know, that like that you're not really, you know, I don't know, that it's that art's going to be more difficult for you. That, like, if you're willing to make those sorts of sacrifices, mm-hmm. That pursuing a career in art is will be not easy but easier. And the more I think about that, the more I think it's sort of wrong, because hopefully we can talk about it in other terms. We can, like, artists could start to produce or like start to be treated in ways, or start to like I don't know, like make their work and make good work, and at the same time, like live healthily and have like positive relationships.
And yes. And actually have a life. Yeah. yeah. Well, we're gonna take a tiny break. We're gonna come back and talk more about, you know, some of these questions. I invite our listeners, if you are an artist and you're struggling with some of these things or trying to figure out how you might sustain yourself as an artist, we've got two great people here who've done it and think about it and talk about it, and it may have some interesting thoughts for you. So we'll be right back. I'm Kathleen McCoy, and this is Hometown Alaska.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy, and we have two fabulous guests on the show today. Karen Lowell's in the studio with me, visual artist here in Anchorage with a show at the museum right now called Groundwork. And on the phone from Vermont, we are lucky to have Jimmy Riordan with us, an Alaskan who incorporates a lot of travel in the way he does his artwork. So we've just been talking a lot about sustainability for artists. Jimmy, I'm going to come at you with a different question now. It's, when did you know you were an artist?
You know, it's sort of a tough question. I mean, I know that I was an artist like since I was a small child, like when you were saying at the beginning that you sort of get
cataloged
like
or yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that by fifth grade, the kids have sort of divided. So at a young age, I considered myself an artist. I know that when I went off to undergrad, I didn't pursue the arts. I pursued a liberal arts degree and studied all different disciplines. And I think it was one of those things that I became reacquainted with, dedicated myself to maybe in my early 20s. But, you know, I had considered myself artistic or an artist of some sort all the way along.
Mm-hmm. But weren't sure about it. Let me just throw out our phone numbers. I meant to do that right when we came back, just in case folks have questions for these two. 550-8433 in Anchorage, or 1-888-353-5752, or an email to hometown@alaskapublic.org. So, Jimmy, you were one of those fifth graders that people pointed to and said, it's him, he's the artist.
I guess so, yeah.
Did you, when you were a kid, drawing and being in your room or in the kitchen or at the kitchen table or something like that more engaging for you than a lot of other ways kids spend their time? I mean, that's kind of solitary right from the get-go. You know, it's you and the paper, or you and the thing your hands are on. Was that typical of you as a kid?
Sort of, but at the same time, I feel like I was lucky in that I had some very close friends at a young age that were also very interested in those things. So though, like, drawing could be seen as a solitary act, I feel like as a child, I actually spent my time drawing often in the company of other people.
That's interesting.
Other people of my age. Mm-hmm.
That makes sense then, because your work is, you do have this, like, you're super easy to be with as a creative person. Like, it doesn't seem like there's a hard line between, oh, I'm in my studio and now I'm going to go have fun with people. It's always, it seems like there's a good overlap and blending often.
Right. I noted when I was looking at your video, kind of talking about your art, Jimmy, and again, we have that at alaskapublic.org, food was involved. There were meals involved, like traveling across the country to visit artists who had been engaged with this book, who had created artwork, you going across the country, all over the place, and then maybe there's a meal involved. And I mean, it just sounds so
familial, communal.
Yeah. Like you're making your own community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, by, I guess, do you think they, how did artists respond to this? You know, here's the book, read the book. This, the translation, your translation of this French book, and then, did they grasp the idea immediately, or were there conversations over the phone from, you know, Munich or someplace like that? Like, what are you talking about, or how do I do? You know, how did it go? How did artists respond to? And I guess you could call it a challenge.
They responded positively initially. A word that I like to use when talking about, especially about Le Roman de Liev and that part of my art is, like, I like to refer to it as being something that's sort of empowering. And when I first sent those books off to these other artists to read and to respond to, I had just moved back to Alaska from living in London and New York for a number of years. And so there was a great deal of correspondence between me and these artists, many of which I didn't know. And this was sort of a lifeline. You know, I had not yet made connections with the arts community in Anchorage. So I was communicating about ideas and about this show and about artwork with these people that mm-hmm. were elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And so, I think people responded well. I mean, initially I didn't expect that large of a turnout. I expected, 10, 20 artists, and we got into the 60s, up to 70 if you include people
Amazing.
That were making things like food.
Amazing. Amazing. And of course, money was never part of this. People weren't paid for this, or did you pay for their supplies, or what was there any engagement with finances at all?
So at that point, there wasn't. It was something that I wasn't thinking about at that time. That wasn't a part of my inner dialogue about production and art.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And has that changed?
Yeah, it definitely has. As I mm-hmm. try to support myself more with my work and mm-hmm. more through my art, mm-hmm. To afford to be able to travel or to afford to be able to not compromise what I'm doing, mm-hmm. It does become, a very, very present.
yeah.
Concern.
I want to circle back to Karen and ask her a little bit that same question. When did you know you were an artist?
Oh, yeah, I was early on. I actually saved a little artist statement from third grade that's pretty hilarious. It's like a little picture of me in a beret and... Yeah, it was like, this is how it's going to roll. I'm going to make art. I'm going to paint a picture of the president. I'm going to get $100. I'm going to give it to the poor people.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm going to work for Hallmark, just like a kind of like really direct, that's how it is.
And, I am an artist.
Yeah. And, there were detours. And I was a musician. I picked up flute in fifth grade and thought that's what I was going to do when I went to college. But then... all of my friends were artists, and I was a life drawing model. And then I started taking classes, and then I lucked into a weaving class and a fiber structures class, and that was it. And then basically since then, it's been, I don't think I've ever not made work.
Mm-hmm.
There have never been any periods where I just quit, and said, oh, I can't do this. It's the only thread that I've got.
Yeah. I'm not really sure what brought you up. I know Jimmy was born here.
Yeah.
You're born in the Midwest, I believe.
I was born in Colorado, and I did a lot of traveling. I lived in Chicago. I lived in the Twin Cities in Minneapolis. And then I lived in Mississippi for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I love traveling. And that's partly why it's hard. I don't consider myself an Alaskan.
Oh, yeah, we had this little discussion at the break. I had said to Jimmy, do you still consider yourself Alaskan? Absolutely. I'm not there very often, but I am an Alaskan. And Karen remarked, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I've been here 20 years now, so you'd think I'd feel comfortable saying that. And I do get the PFD. But I I don't feel like I'm from here and haven't. And I keep thinking I should, you know, oh, it's so beautiful here. But I feel very isolated. I moved up in the early 90s. I got married and thought that it was just going to last, you know, a couple years and then we would travel on, and just haven't. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my life's changed quite a bit since then. I'm no longer with my my kid's dad, but I'm still in the state and I'm dedicated to staying until they're kind of up and out in their, on their own.
So you're the sort of the non-Alaskan living in Alaska.
Yes.
But you're not really a non-Alaskan, but you don't feel quite at home here.
Yeah.
So, you know, here's a question for both of you. How does being here affect your work? And of course, groundwork is a lot about that.
It is,
About terrain, about breakup. You know, so in any, we mentioned that. Is there more to that that you'd want to share? Or, and then I will ask Jimmy the same thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think one of the things that when I was in grad school and even before that, just thinking about the art world, I tend to think globally and internationally and conceptual work and very contemporary. These are very exhilarating to me. And I think one of the things that happens when you stay in one place for a long time is you realize that there is a kind of regionalism, which may or may not be, it's not a judgment, but I do think that there are themes and images that tend to work into the thing just because you're in the landscape.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of Alaska in the work I do, but I don't think it's a convivial conversation all the time. Like I feel really strongly like the darkness of winter, and I feel the isolation and the kind of the exhaustion that kicks in, you know, winter after winter. So I think I definitely address those kinds of things. And, you know, over time, you kind of make peace with things. So I think I've gotten to the point where I'm interested in the subject matter now. It's not something I resist.
And by subject matter, you mean the terrain of Alaska,
yes.
The light of Alaska.
Kind of the ugliness of breakup season and the long, and like summers are great, but it's also kind of exhausting.
It's manic. Right?
Yeah.
How about you, Jimmy? What does coming from Alaska mean to you in terms of the work you've done?
I mean, I think that Alaska, or being from Alaska, living in Alaska, has had a huge impact on my work. When listening to Karen, or like when thinking about the question while Karen was talking, the thing that really came to mind is when I first returned to Alaska, I was doing primarily book work and printmaking, stuff that could be hung on walls or like objects that could be shown in shows. And I remember initially just not being happy with the response or the conversations, you know, not feeling that the conceptual or critical dialogue that I wanted was happening around the work that I was producing. And so my response, or like how I felt like I could best deal with it, was making my artwork a lot more collaborative, a lot more cooperative, much more in like the public space. And so I think things like the U-Haul Festival that you were talking about, a lot of the other projects that I've done that really put themselves out into places other than gallery spaces. They're very much a response to Alaska, to like that. Well, if you think of your art making as a form of communication and you're trying to communicate with these people not getting the response you want, then you can change the way that you're talking. You can change the way that you're communicating. And I didn't feel the need for that in like New York or London. Like the community was large enough, or the people that were talking about the same things as me were large enough that I could just sit there and we could talk to each other.
And that's how I think that's how I got to know you, was through these collaborative efforts. It was great. There was the brick project downtown that was the circumscribed area, and there were several things going on there. That's when you had the bike library.
That was Michael Jurace's birth project.
But he's also part of brick.
Kind of.
Maybe. Yeah, I know.
Slides in.
Who knows?
And then there was the U-Haul thing. There was that great project at APU, the house project. That was great. Did you see that one,
I didn't
Kathleen?
Get to see that.
So it was Jimmy built a house. He built a cabin in the APU gallery in the ConocoPhillips room.
Wow.
And for a month had an artist live in the house for a full week in the space. And you could just do whatever you wanted, but you had to stay in there. That was
crazy,
good.
Crazy. I'm going to throw out our phone numbers just one more time. And we've got an email that I'd love to read, too. So 550-8433 in Anchorage, or send us an email to hometown at alaskapublic.org. So we've got an email that came from Elise Rose. Does that ring a bell?
Hi, Elise.
She apparently knows you, both of you, very well. She says, I met Jimmy and Karen when I was a student at UAA. They have been important and inspiring teachers to me, and the things they taught me have stayed with me. I would like to know what teaching has been to them and whether either intends to return to teaching. I hope so, even though I know that it sometimes seems unrewarding. For whatever it is worth, both Karen and Jimmy have been made a huge difference for me.
Wow.
Well, that's awfully touching.
Nice.
Yeah.
Thanks, Elise.
Yeah. So the question in there is about teaching, and it was one that I wanted to ask anyway. You know, I know you both have taught. Maybe you're not teaching now. I don't know. And whether that fills your batteries or drains your batteries, or just what effect does teaching have on you?
I think if I could just teach and make art, it would be, it has always been sustaining and nourishing. And I have seen some incredible work come out of students. And Elise is one of those people. She calls herself one of my students, but I learned so much from her, and she is now a producing artist. She's got a show coming up with Nancy Stallings at the International Gallery in November, and you should go see that.
Okay.
But the problem is when you're trying to teach and work another job and make art and take care of your family or whatever.
And
yeah.
Your
so
life and your health.
It did drain me, mostly because I just wasn't getting enough sleep. And by the time I quit teaching last year, I was tired, and I wasn't a very good teacher. I was too
spent. Yeah.
Too spent. Yeah.
How about you, Jimmy? What's your experience with teaching and the way it works into your life as an artist?
I mean, I very much love teaching, and I don't teach at the university level much anymore. I occasionally do one credit courses here and there. But I still do very much, teaching is a part of my practice. I'm part of the Alaska State Council for the Arts, Artists and Schools program, so I still get out to different rural villages and work on bookbinding or other projects in those locations. And I actually, just a couple days ago, was down in New York at a high school in Bed-Stuy showing the lead type that was used for the printing of my book to a class of high school students there. So getting into classrooms and being with students and sharing, it's really important to me. Again, like Karen said, trying to figure out how to just do that and make art sounds ideal. It's when you have to add that third job onto it
or
that it becomes.
Just a question in a slightly different vein, and I'm not sure how relevant it is, but Jimmy, when I was talking with you, you were talking about melting lead in, you know, part of your demonstration, and then I was thinking about what Karen has been making, and it probably has involved resins and chemicals.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of thinking about the materials you work with, and they might be dangerous even sometimes, or you don't think about them that way, or,
well,
you know.
I didn't think about it early on. I did some stupid lead resin experiments, but I don't want to poison myself. So, for this show, I was really aware of, environmental impact. The resin I used is a low odor, low toxicity, so I'm pretty conscious of that. I don't know about lead, though, Jimmy. How do you get around that?
Yeah.
lead is actually, I did read a lot about lead and safety, and I'm using a respirator, and in events where there's other people, I'm starting to use a smoke eater to help consume the fumes. The fumes are somewhat dangerous. The biggest problem with lead is lead particulates, particles. Breathing those in, and none of that's involved in what I'm doing.
Or licking it, or eating it, right?
No lead snacks.
It's not going to absorb through your skin and cause you problems. And, you know, people have been working, stained glass artists, and anybody that works with a movable type.
True.
Printmakers work with lead all the time.
Another little different question that I thought about interviewing these guys and thought about all the things I wanted to ask artists. And one of the things I wanted to know is this idea of doubt and, you know, self-doubt, and everybody has times of doubt. But when you're creating, what's that doubt about? Is it about your creative self, or, you know, I kind of want to get at that topic of doubt and when it goes away and when it comes back. And I know that, again, that's a kind of one of those really big, broad questions. But again, I think it's a really human one. Even if you're not an artist, you have times of doubt. If you're an artist, what is that time like? Jimmy, let's throw it to you.
I feel as though my times of doubt are often accompanied by like exhaustion. So if I'm really, really worn out for one reason or another, that's when I start doubting what I'm doing. I feel very lucky in that when I'm not exhausted, I am very happy with and don't have very many regrets when it comes to like the way that I'm living my life or the way that I'm like pursuing my artwork. So like there's doubt there, and there's smaller doubts when it comes to particular projects or particular pieces and their quality. But like when it comes to like larger sort of like doubt of like, why am I doing this? Or those really only are at times when I also doubt that it's like, I'm going to be able to get out of my bed.
Epic doubt. And sometimes you don't, right? Let's just call it a day. And I'm going to bed early at 8 a.m. Yeah. Yeah, I've had those temptations myself. How about you, Karen? Does this resonate with you in any way, the sense of doubt and overcoming doubt?
Well, and I'm in this weird spot where I think the work that I do is really good. I feel very confident about the actual thing that's apart from myself. But I suffer from enormous self-doubt. And I've been working on it, and I've been realizing that one of the things I probably need to work on in the future is to have conversations with people and not be so self-critical or nervous. Because this is the thing about you see people, you think, oh, they must like really feel great about themselves. But, you know, sometimes that's not true. And I think I don't know. I probably wish I weren't so doubtful. Mm-hmm. I'm not confident in myself. I'm confident in the work, but the presentation and talking about things and having like even being on this show like makes me nervous, and because I don't know if I'm worthy. Like there's that kind of stuff that gets wrapped up in it, which I think is dumb. I wish I didn't feel like that, and I'm working on it. But
you know, I wondered another one of my questions had to do with audience. You know, how much do you think of audience? Writers think about audience all the time because they're trying to get them line from line from line all the way through something.
Yeah.
How much do you think about audience, say, with groundwork or... Go ahead.
When I said earlier that I'm interested in these sort of big conversations, part of the problem with living in Anchorage, I think, is that I'm not interacting with people who speak the same kind of language or are interested in the same kind of ideas. So it was interesting to put this work out there. I knew I probably wasn't going to be talking to a lot of people. But the essence of the work drove the work rather than worrying about connecting. And then I was pleasantly surprised after the work went up how many people who are not even artists or from an art background could get information out of those pieces. It was really surprising and satisfying. So,
How about you, Jimmy? What about audience in your realm of creating?
I think about audience a fair amount. I think that certain projects, certain things, I'm thinking less about the audience and more about like production or about like the process. Especially with more public or more community-based projects, audience is a very, very big deal.
Sometimes you can actually figure out, oh, if I do this, I know I'm going to get a reaction. And, you know, is that what you're trying to do, or are you trying to say something? And it doesn't really matter if it resonates or not. You're not going for the reaction. What do you think, Jimmy?
Sometimes it's not about reaction, but about involvement. Like, it's getting an audience or getting a community to be involved in what you're doing, kind of be more hands-on with what you're doing, can be really rewarding. And it's not going to just happen on its own. You do have to like consider them, and you do have to like make space for them.
And invite them. Like that's what I do admire about the way you work, is that it always feels welcoming. It feels like invitational. You're really good about talking about your work. You know, like it doesn't seem like you're nervous or self-conscious. It feels really natural. I respect
that's
you
important.
A lot.
I'm going to take a call. I'd like to welcome Caroline to Hometown Alaska. Hi, Caroline. What's your question?
Good afternoon. My question, let me do a preface here. I've been collecting since 1974, and I never get follow-ups Well, very seldom. And now, of course, it's very easy to do it. Follow-ups from the artists I've purchased from to, you know, at least send me a link to their work. And I kind of wonder if that's going to change, because obviously I'm interested in artists. I certainly understand the lady saying, and by the way, I'm looking forward to hearing this in total tonight because I got interrupted a couple of times, but listening to her say about being shy within herself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think being an artist must be harder than being a model because, you know, somebody is rejecting not just your work, but your whole being. And anyway, I think that what you folks do is astounding, and it is life-sustaining. That's something that I haven't heard discussed, though maybe it has been.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you look at a piece of art and it touches you, it changes you as much as a beautiful symphony or ballet or whatever. And I really encourage everyone to not be ashamed of what they do. People can either like or not like, but their essence is what is shown through what they do.
Mm. You know, something you said that I thought was interesting, we were talking on the show about how Jimmy engages people, and that's how he thinks of audience, giving them space, inviting them in. Here you are, someone who purchases art, and you still want some dialogue with that artist.
And that's great to hear. And I think the good thing about the tools that we have now, it's like there are so many ways of connecting. And I think artists do forget that it's still a conversation. Like if somebody has acknowledged that the work is good and they take it into their homes, we need to keep those conversations active. You don't just, it's not just an object. You've started a relationship. That's good to hear. That's actually really
valuable.
It's
not the way I think most people think about it. Actually, they purchase it, they display it, maybe they think about it and react to it, but don't necessarily close the loop with the artist. So I think that's really interesting, Caroline. Thank you. Thank you for calling. I have another question about for Jimmy and for Karen. I'll throw our numbers out one more time, 550-8433, or give us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. Here's a question. How do you know when something is good? And do you sometimes feel something is good or bad and you're getting a completely different reaction from other people? Either they don't like it, they don't see the value, or they see a lot of value in something that you feel wasn't successful. So, Jimmy.
that's a tough one. I think that that's probably often the case, and even when I'm not aware of it, it's probably often the case that like the response or the value that's being placed in what I'm doing is different than how I perceive it. I guess as an anecdote or as an example, the most successful, probably financially successful, art objects that I've made, and I mean by that like things that I've sold to individuals as opposed to like funded through grants or other means, was I would go out and borrow, I don't own a gun, so I'd borrow my friend's gun, and we'd shoot like tin cans, like Campbell's soup cans and such, and I'd taxidermy them with pewter bird legs and make it look like this like chicken noodle soup can or quail egg can.
And then you
like
put a price tag on it?
and then I'd you know, put that in the gallery, and those, I mean, I couldn't make those fast enough. And to me, like the value that those objects had was less than like some of these things that I've like put a huge amount of thought, you know, a huge amount of my own self and my own energy into. But like to an audience or somebody that's looking for something that they'd like to purchase or like they'd put like to put on their mantle, there is a certain novelty to it that gave it a value that I maybe didn't perceive.
Yeah, that's really interesting, Karen. It's hilarious. We have about a minute left. Do you have a story, Copper, where you made something that people snapped up?
Oh yeah, kind of, and they were often fairly quick. Same kind of thing.
Uh huh.
And I do. I mean, I think everybody wants to know, like, well, when is your work? How do you know your work is good, or when do you know it's finished? It's like when you do a lot of work, you know, and you know when it's stupid, and you know when it's really good. And I'm working towards making good work.
Yeah. Well, gosh, it's been really fun having you
Kathleen.
On. You know, it's a great opportunity to talk to you about your work. But you both really were generous in your responses, and you know, I don't know. I really, really appreciate it, and think it was great to have you on. And I look forward, Karen, to what you're going to do going forward. You said this show at the museum, which is open till November 9th, is kind of a gateway to something new. Jimmy, when will we see? I think you're going to be back in Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I'm coming back to Alaska in late November. I'm doing a series of readings for my book, and like we were talking about melting lead type down into ingot.
And I have to go, Jimmy. I have to go. I'm sorry. We just ran out of time. I just want to thank you guys so much for being on Hometown Alaska today. We just ran out of time. Thank you, Jimmy Reardon and Karen Lowell. Next week, I'll be back as your host. We'll be joined by Patsy Shaha from the Alaska Native Cultural Charter School. She's the principal. I'm excited for that show. Pat Yak is Vice President of Public Media. Monica Goki is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.